This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey you, yeah you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
Now, Macca, are you going to introduce Catherine for us?
Yes, Catherine Bennett from Deakin University, our favourite epidemiologist. Catherine, good morning. We've just seen
Good morning to you both. New South Wales,
466.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's what we've actually been watching this all the way through. The what we call that reproduction number has been sitting just above one, around 1.2, 1.3. That's actually, you know, meant that it was controlled, but you're still seeing a 20% increase every 4 or 5 days. And of course, as the numbers go up, 20% means more cases added in each 4 or 5 days. And so that is the concern, that we're seeing this escalation, low level still, but it's now translating to these very large numbers that are much harder for the health department to manage.
Catherine, there's a technical matter there. What's this number that you're talking about?
So this is an important number we use to monitor how we're controlling outbreaks. It's the number of cases, or the number of infections that result from each new infection. So if someone's infected now in one generation of spread, which is 4 to 5 days, how many people has every case on average infected? So if everyone who gets infected only passes it on to one person, you just keep this sort of constant number.
Yes.
But we're seeing on average every 10 people pass it on, like the next generation of cases is 12 people or 13 people.
So it's slowly growing.
Yeah, so it's adding 2 or 3. But of course, once your base number is 100, it's adding 20 or 30 every 4 or 5 days. And now, of course, we've gone beyond the 100. And so, unfortunately, while the growth rate is still constant and showing it's still being held, the actual number of increased cases we're seeing goes up because it's coming off this higher base each time.
So can I ask, Catherine, there's been a lot of discussion about different percentages of the community as vaccinated. There's been 70% and there's 80%, and there's, you know, there's a plan around this. For the sake of my question, at what level of vaccination of the eligible community, right? So everyone other than those very, very, very young.
Under the age of 12.
Under the age of 12, at what vaccination level and the number of new infections would you open the Victorian border to New South Wales? What does it need to be?
Well, if we consider the modelling that was done for the Australian government, they tell us that really, in order to keep the virus contained, to be able to use, to rely on our test, trace and isolate like we used to without either local lockdowns or border closures, we really do need to be looking at about 80% of that eligible group. So that's 62% or so of the whole population. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're aiming for, and we're actually tracking there faster than we thought would even be possible a month ago. So that's the good news. Apart from that, it will depend on how those localised, concentrated efforts to both contain the outbreak in New South Wales, plus a rising background of vaccination coverage, how that works over the next, you know, month or so will tell us how likely it is that they might be able to fully contain this and close it down, or whether they're now looking at just aiming to control the case numbers and keep them as low as possible. It also depends what's happening in Melbourne. And, of course, we've seen another 21 cases today, thankfully all linked, but again telling us we've still got work to do. We still have people who've been out in the community. And while we're in lockdown, that's relatively low risk. But we're seeing a similar pattern to New South Wales, just in much lower numbers. And so, again, with the vaccination rollout, hopefully we'll just always keep those numbers low. It depends whether we've got a chance now to actually get it back to zero or whether we're going to, again, live with low numbers. So it depends what's happening both sides of the border and also what's happening overall in terms of our vaccination rate. We're looking to get to 70%, at least with everyone having 70% having that first dose in late October, early November, and then the second dose then, you know, depending on which vaccines they've had over the next couple of months. So we're actually talking about a near horizon now to level the playing field in a way, to make it possible to close down outbreaks and get them to containable levels. That's what will open up the borders.
Catherine, we know what's happening here in Australia at the moment. 465 cases or 66 cases in New South Wales today, 21 in Victoria. If you were the advisor to the Victorian government, what would you say about how to handle the border at the moment?
At the moment, while we're concerned, because we do have across Victoria, we've got these areas now with wastewater showing positive as well. So Shepparton's the latest one to be added, Lakes Entrance, for example. We're still assessing where we're at. So the Victorian government won't make a decision about the border while they still don't know what our current situation is. If it's manageable and if we can get down to zero, then clearly that's going to be their focus. There's so much going on in New South Wales and the concern about the spread outside of the Greater Sydney area that I don't think states will be in a position to open the border soon, because either we've already got our own problem to deal with, or if we close this down, we won't want to have reseeding of the virus into the Victorian community until those vaccination rates go up. But hopefully we're talking months, not many months.
Even months is a lot, really. But
absolutely.
I was going to say, a lot of our planning and a lot of the discussion at the moment is about the current range of variants to COVID-19 that we're aware of, in particular Delta. Mm. But there are other variants on the horizon. I'm hearing talk about Kappa and Lambda. What do you know about that, and what light can you shed to our listeners this morning about those variants?
Well, Kappa we know, unfortunately, a bit too well. That's the one responsible for the outbreaks we had, not in this lockdown or the last, but the one before, so going back to May.
Yeah.
And it was another one that came out of the rapid rising cases in India. And so we do know that virus. And we were able to contain that. Our contact tracing efforts still worked. It was more infectious. But we still had time to get to cases before they were infectious, and so to get them into quarantine and so on. That made the big difference. We don't know as much about Lambda. Lambda's the one, it actually first emerged at the end of last year in South America. We were watching it in places like Peru. It didn't take off, and so probably not as infectious as Delta, which has tended to dominate. But they're still looking at it, because now it's one of those ones where the vaccines, particularly some of the vaccines used in parts of the world that came out of China, these attenuated virus vaccines, which have helped, you know, they've reduced serious illness and so on, but don't seem to stand up as well against these variants. So we're still learning about how it's covered by a range of vaccines, including the ones we use in Australia, but also how it competes with Delta in terms of infectiousness.
So this is a moving feast, isn't it? It's a moving feast.
Absolutely. And even, you know, these variants, as I said, have been around since December and we haven't seen them take off, but they're still there. And they are starting to, you know, pick up in some areas. And so we have to understand all the variants circulating to make sure that we, you know, we're managing our response in light of that. You know, it has changed what we've had to do in Australia with Delta. It took us away from that question about whether you can use lockdowns or not when you bring them in. If you're going to do it, you have to do it straight away just to try and get on top of it when contact tracing on its own can't do it anymore. And that's that's a step change. It's only a, you know, it's still, they're all increasing in infectiousness in the ones we've talked about, but this one crossed the line. This one took it beyond the limits of our current contact tracing, which is why it was so different. And just really unfortunate it's happened 4 months before we were probably going to get our vaccination levels high enough to help combat that.
We've got a question from a listener. Can Catherine please explain the term viral evolution?
So it's a bit what we've been talking about, really. It's the fact that every time, you know, any organism replicates, you can get these errors in transcription. So the genetic material changes by chance. You know, it's just literally an error, a mutation. And occasionally, you know, very rarely, but when you have a lot of replication of virus, even in one infection, let alone in waves, you can find that process just leads to a particular strain of the virus that has advantages, that can spread faster and dominate other strains, or that causes more serious illness. That's not selected for necessarily. Sometimes that works against the virus because it makes people shut the virus down faster. But at the same time, it's what we worry about, that by chance you could get a virus that could be more dangerous or where the current vaccinations don't cover it. So you will see this process happening. The more infection there is in the world, the more you speed up that clock. You know, the likelihood that that mutation rate is high enough that you will start to see another variant that we then have to worry about.
We're
so
for a long
that's why
journey.
We want to suppress infection. Absolutely. And you know, hopefully, like some other strains, like the pandemic flu strains, that will take us to a point where you get a more benign version of the virus that's covered by our vaccines and where, you know, we can live with it. But the whole point is we want to suppress transmission. And by doing that at the moment through lockdowns and other restrictions as we get our vaccination rates up, but it slows the clock, makes it less likely we have to, you know, worry about other variants in the very near future. And we need to think globally. We need to think about all the countries that can't otherwise afford or roll out vaccination programs as well. So, you know, it's not even just an equity issue, though that's important, obviously. It's also just what we have to do globally together to try and, you know, slow this down so that we can work out how to live with it.
Now, if you were, here's a hypothetical, Catherine. If you were part of the public health team in New South Wales and you were sitting across the table from the Premier and the Health Minister, what would be is there a piece of advice that you think might benefit how they're dealing with this outbreak?
I think we've seen, it's the data that comes out of the outbreak that really, you know, informs you. The trouble is Delta works so quickly, by the time you see what's happening, you end up with you're chasing the virus again rather than being on top of it. I think what I would have suggested is not necessarily going to whole of Greater Sydney for the more extreme lockdown, because no city has the resources to do that in the way they're trying to keep the virus in local areas. If you did that to all of Sydney, you might suppress overall number of cases a bit, but you'd probably see greater spread across Sydney because you wouldn't be able to test every you know, essential worker who had to move across LGAs, for example. So I do understand the approach, which is about trying to focus effort. But I think I would have suggested, in fact, I was suggesting in the media that, you know, maybe getting that bigger buffer zone, putting that firebreak around those areas where the virus was. They have done that. They've moved faster to bring in other LGAs where they see the problem emerging. But I think, as difficult as the decision as it is, I would have done that even before they were seeing those numbers rise, just so that you're protecting those buffer communities from the virus coming in, and you're also protecting Greater
Sydney. A listener
has
just texted in to let me know that they finally have introduced five-kilometre limits for everybody across New South Wales. It's a good thing, but it's actually probably about a month too late, unfortunately. Catherine, we are out of time, but we always love speaking with you. So you're welcome on our show as often as you're available to join us and to shed some light on what are incredibly complex issues that are affecting all of us and all of our ability to live the sort of lives that we used to enjoy living. Thank you very much.
So thank you.
Thank you, both.
Cheers. Thank you.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.